Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing pretty good.
Awesome. Got a lot of feedback for our last couple episodes. A lot of positive. I'm pretty happy about that.
We're just really thankful that so many people have reached out to us, and we've gotten a lot of feedback. We've gotten many, many suggestions for topics, and I can assure you that after this, well, of course, the one that we're covering on this episode was suggested to us, and then out of the next, say, 5 weeks after this one, the vast majority of those were suggestions as well. So we are getting to your suggestions, trust me.
We're backlogged right now. I wanted to thank people for the feedback. We got a little bit of mixed reviews on our Oak Island one, which I found interesting just because I had a couple people who are big Oak Island fans who didn't think that I gave that mystery or that story enough credit. Meanwhile, we got some online feedback where we were told that we gave way too much credit to the story and the myth. And it's interesting how everybody interprets the story of Oak Island and interprets our interpretation of Oak Island, because one person can say that I gave it no credit, and another person can say that I gave it way too much credit. So I just find it interesting, and thank you for the feedback, because it makes me think about how I come off on the podcast and how I say things about, you know, some of the stories that we cover.
Well, I know when it comes to things like this, we have to cover the popular stories that are told about the case that we're covering, because otherwise, what's the point of covering it? Oak Island has many, many stories. If we didn't cover them, however preposterous they are, they may be silly. They may be silly stories. They may have no factual evidence to back them up, but we still have to cover them, because this is why the story persists, because there are people who like those stories. There are others who believe in those stories. Quite fair to say that in the end, we essentially debunk those stories. So I don't see where the harm is.
Yeah. You can't debunk something if you don't explain what it is that you're debunking in the first place. So
it's also come up that some episodes are missing. I can assure you that some of the episodes that we've taken down, and they're not permanently gone, they're just sort of private. Some of those episodes have to do with a sport, and we don't feel as though it's relevant to what the podcast has become. And other episodes that were missing, many of those have been put back up. So I will be taking another look. I will see if any more need to be activated.
Yeah, I mean, we're big MMA fans, but no one probably wants to hear our MMA episodes, so it's all good.
And a big part of that was when we first started doing this, we sort of wanted to cover everything we were interested in, and a small part of that was MMA. We still covered unsolved mysteries, murders. We covered controversies, but we did cover MMA. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
So there are quite a few episodes, say 3 and 20. There are others that I've taken down that just, they don't seem relevant anymore. So I'm saving you the trouble. And I do want to give a shout out to Shane for his donation. And that's much appreciated, especially since we just ordered some new shirts. And that definitely helps. So if you contribute in some way to us, or I think sometimes it's at random, but we usually reach out and we try to send something out to some of our listeners from time to time. We have so many, it's impossible to get to everybody, but...
Yeah, last month we had over 230,000 downloads, and we're going to break that this month. So we try our best to communicate with all of you, but it's hard to keep up sometimes. So what's tonight's podcast about, Aaron?
Well, this was a listener suggestion, and the person who suggested it is from the area. She's from Minnesota, and this is about Glensheen Mansion in Duluth. But it's actually a little bit more than just about the mansion. It's also about some women. There's Elizabeth Congdon and her adopted daughter, Marjorie Caldwell. And we'll get more into that coming up.
So this mansion was built in 1905, and it sits on 7.6 acres. It has 38 rooms, 27,000 square feet. The surrounding landscape, they actually imported trees and dynamited troughs to make creeks. So pretty much most of the landscape around the mansion is all man-made, actually. But it's beautiful. It's very, very pretty scenery up there. A lot of the mansion has, the rooms are trimmed with cedar, walnut, oak. You know, they spared no expense creating this house, this home. I forgot what the original price tag was, but just the carpet in the dining room, they say the carpet cost $3,000 in that time. And in that same time frame, a house, like a normal single-family home, costs $3,000. So just the rug alone costs the same price as a house, to give people a sort of an understanding of this is big money. Chester was he was in copper and iron mining?
Yeah, he was in banking and mining.
Mm-hmm.
I have the final cost of the house that it started in 1905. They actually completed it in 1908.
Mm-hmm.
And the final cost was $854,000, which in 1908, that's a pretty chunk of change.
I mean, that's a chunk of change today, but I'm sure doing the math, this would probably be a $50 million house today.
I couldn't even guess, but yes, it's going to be some crazy amount of money.
There's one room in the house that's, I thought it was kind of an ugly room, but it's the breakfast room. And they have this green tile all over the room. And one tile at that time cost like $7 or $8 a tile. And in today's time, that would be $200 a tile. And I just think it's ugly green tile, but, you know, hey, I think Porsches are ugly and they cost a lot of money. So,
I think tiles generally are about $2. So if it's $200, that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. So this is big money. These guys, they're not messing around. They had money and go so far as to say they were part of the 1% back then. They had a big family. So how many children did they have?
They had 7 children total.
Okay.
Elizabeth was the youngest daughter. And she, to give you some perspective on this, most of the children were older by this point. So her being the youngest girl, she had a brother that was a little younger than she was. She was 14 when Glensheen Mansion was completed, when they were able to move in.
Most of her older siblings had already moved out or were on their way to moving out.
That's just it. It's not as though this was a – they had other homes. They had prior homes, and they had – I believe they had at least one other house at this time that was quite substantial as well. Chester died just within 8 years of the house being completed.
He didn't even get to enjoy it.
No. I do know that Chester and Clara, they were involved in the designing of the house with the architect. They really made a lot of the choices, put their stamp on it. Clara continued to live there. Elizabeth, this is later on, she ended up adopting two daughters. Now, she's not married. She didn't get married. But she ends up adopting two girls. Their names are Marjorie and Jennifer. And at this point, you won't hear about Jennifer anymore. And that's because when you have a girl like Marjorie around, she's going to take all of the attention.
Marjorie had problems. At a very young age, she had a lot of problems and apparently didn't get the help she needed, maybe, or maybe she did, but it just wasn't working out so well for her. But I think she was diagnosed actually as a sociopath before she was 18.
I had read that same thing, that she was diagnosed as a sociopath. I know she also had a habit of borrowing money, mm-hmm. which of course she doesn't pay back.
No.
And as she gets older, she doesn't stick with one guy. Really, it doesn't pick up until she marries Roger Caldwell.
She marries him. They're financially broke. They're almost on the verge of bankruptcy or whatever they're doing. And Marjorie is pretty much the heir. She is next in line. If something were to happen to Elizabeth, all the inheritance goes to Marjorie, correct?
Well, I don't know that all of it does. Mm-hmm. We'll have to cover this. We'll have to get into this more after we describe what happens next, mm-hmm. which is, as best we know, Roger Caldwell goes to the house, to this mansion, and he attacks the night nurse with a candlestick, and he bludgeons her to death.
He throws her down the stairs and then finishes her off with the candlestick. It was a pretty brutal attack.
Her name was Velma. And then Elizabeth was, at this point, she was not doing well. She was partially paralyzed. So she didn't obviously put up much of a fight when he used a pink satin pillow and smothered her to death in her bed.
After that, he takes some jewelry and he ransacks the house and messes it up to make it look like a burglary. He takes off. The police investigate and they finally charge Marjorie, but they can't get anything to stick on Marjorie, right? They drop the charges against her.
No, they try to get her because they charge him with two counts of murder. Mm-hmm. They charge her with conspiracy.
Okay.
Because they believe, since she's the family member, that she's the one who planned this, that she wants to have her best shot at the inheritance. And this is where we find out that there was a hastily written will that was done just about 3 days prior to the murders. So she is trying to get the money.
So something that people need to understand is she has issues. She's very unstable. Just because somebody is unstable doesn't mean that they're, I don't know how to put this, incompetent at life. I mean, she might not be able to hold down a job, but she can manipulate people still. She can still get people to do her bidding. I mean, if you were good at working on cars, just because you become bipolar or something doesn't mean that you forget how to work on cars. And my interpretation of Marjorie is she was a manipulative person, and her psychosis just made her that much worse. And I personally think she put him up to it. But getting a conspiracy charge to stick is pretty hard.
Well, and that's where I would sort of disagree, because it completely makes sense that she's the one who planned this. She's had a troubled past. She's the one who's married to this person. it's her mother that was murdered.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, is she did do this. Just because she's crazy and out of her mind does not mean that she's not capable of it. That's what I was trying to say.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say, though, is that the conspiracy charge should have stuck.
Yeah.
And when you talk about manipulation, she had so many people that would swear up and down that she was such a great person, mm-hmm. that they loved her. After the trial, when she was acquitted, there were jurors that went over and hugged her. They were very happy for her, and she continued to be friends with some of these jurors even after the trial. Roger Caldwell was not so lucky. He was found guilty, and he was given two life terms for the murders. But something interesting happens, which is because Marjorie's trial went so well, there was some evidence presented during her trial that sort of forced the hand of the state Supreme Court to say, well, you know, if she's not involved here, then why would he be? Maybe you guys are barking up the wrong tree. He deserves a new trial. So prosecutors moved quickly because they didn't want to lose this. And to save some face, they actually got him to plead guilty to second-degree murder. So it's not quite the acquittal that some people say it was. And so he got off with time served.
Yeah, he served like 6 years.
Yeah, it was about 5, maybe 6 years. So he gets out, but at least the prosecutors can say that they did find the person responsible and they did prosecute them and they did get a guilty verdict.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So, and then after he's released from prison, he fully openly confesses that he did this, and there's no question about it at that point that he did this, and he even says, my goal was to get the inheritance for Marjorie, but he's already been released from prison with time served, so there's really not much they can do at this point.
Well, it doesn't end there either, because there are mixed stories about whether they know he confessed. There's mm-hmm. actually a transcript online of it. But you could also say that there was motivation to do that. There's also motivation for him to not take credit for the murders, which he also does. He also denies that he did it. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to say, but he ends up committing suicide.
Yeah. While he was in jail, Marjorie didn't stick around for him.
Right. This is, if there's any question about whether she's a dangerous person or not, the following information will clear that up. Just before we get to this other information that you alluded to. I want to say that after the trial, it came out from her family that she had visited her mother. This was probably 2 years prior, and she had prepared some marmalade sandwiches for her. And the family believes they were laced with poison because her mother fell gravely ill. And as you mentioned, she didn't stick around with Roger. She had some friends, and they were Wally Hagen and his wife Helen. She was more or less really friends with Wally because she starts hanging out with him. And around this time, Helen, who's suffering from Alzheimer's, gets put into a nursing home. But Marjorie visits Helen unexpectedly while she's at the nursing home. After she leaves, Helen ends up falling into a coma, and she dies 4 days later. And you would ask, well, did they investigate? Sure, you know. They checked it out, and they found that her cause of death was listed as pneumonia brought on by dehydration. But they didn't investigate under the idea that Marjorie did something. They just went off of what they knew of the woman and what her condition was and what had been going on with her health. But again, it was later found out that she had brought Helen food.
It's so crazy that she's somehow skating past all of these crimes here, but go on.
No, that's what's so fascinating about her first so many decades on the planet is that she seems to get away with things that most people would be nailed to the wall for. After Helen dies, just 4 months later, Wally and Marjorie are married, despite the fact that Marjorie is still married to Roger Caldwell.
Who's sitting in jail.
No big deal.
Yeah.
It's around this time that Marjorie's, and trust me, there are too many people to cover in this story.
Yeah.
So we're trying to shrink it down for you so it's easier to swallow. But her children are suing her for the inheritance money that she's supposed to receive because she wasn't guilty of the murders. So she should be able to get the money. Well, this is where, depending on the court you're in, things can change drastically. Marjorie doesn't get all of the inheritance money. Now, she gets what we would deem a lot of money, but she has quite a bit also that's been siphoned off through the courts for her children because they say that she is guilty, that she is complicit, and the court agrees. And so she loses some of that money.
Oh.
Now we find out that Marjorie has a thing for fire because it's at this time that the Hagen's home burns down. Or at least it catches fire. It's a bad fire. Mm-hmm. And so here is Marjorie, and she collects the insurance money. And then she's arrested. Finally, it seems as though the boys in blue have finally zeroed in on her, and they've got her.
But she gets arrested for arson and insurance fraud. But how many months does she spend in prison for this? Like 15 months or something? It seemed like a short sentence to me.
She's difficult to nail down, I suppose.
Yeah.
Is that what we're learning here?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is this the manipulation that we talked about, that she's just... I mean, even when she's in prison, even the guards like her. They stop and chat with her, and she's well-liked by most people. That doesn't mean that everyone swallows her what we might say her BS, but... It seems as though most of the people that end up around her, they're taken in by her.
So some people just have that charm and that how to speak to people, and it doesn't matter if they're slightly off. The state actually charges her with bigamy too because she tried to marry her boyfriend while she was still married to the other guy, and she kind of got skated that charge also, which I didn't quite get. But again, it's nothing. They can't get much to stick on her because of her and her personality. She moves on to Arizona, and there she's accused of burning down her neighbor's house. I didn't find out if they actually got that charge to stick. Did you?
Well, it's in Arizona that she ends up going to prison.
Okay. So essentially, Caldwell went to jail, kills himself. She goes on with Hagen and gets arrested for arson and insurance fraud. After she gets out of jail there, she goes on to Arizona, where then she burns her neighbor's house down and gets charged for that. I mean, this lady's on a rampage, right?
Right. There's actually a series of fires.
Mm-hmm.
And the last of those was next door to her house.
Yeah, that was her neighbor's, yeah.
And they say that they saw Marjorie in the backyard and that kerosene-soaked rags were found. So she's arrested, and a judge gives her 24 hours to get her affairs in order. And it's really strange, but she ends up calling her husband's son, Tom, and saying that his father has died. And what's really curious about this is she was there that day. This was her last day before she has to go to prison. And she visits him, and they say that it was a pill overdose.
Yeah, he overdosed by trying to take pills.
And that she says that she was going to take pills and kill herself. But she says that she backed out at the last minute.
Now, there's suspicion that she exposed him to natural gas. I don't really know what the story is behind that, or the allegations, or something came out on the autopsy report. The family, like the son, they suspect that she killed him, which I don't blame them for their suspicions in the slightest. And they say that she used, she turned on the natural gas in the house or the stove or something and got him to breathe in, you know, methane or whatever it was, to the point where it was toxic.
Yeah, they charged her with his murder, but then it's dropped. Here's the problem. I think what helps her in this case isn't so much her manipulative nature, but the fact that this is just well planned, because they wrote a suicide pact. So when the investigators have that hanging over them, they can't quite carry through on their plans to take her back to prison for this murder. Where do you have it now?
So she walks from that, and then she's later charged with fraud. And I think she's back in jail for that. That was in 2007.
The forgery trials, the forgery charges were filed in 2007.
Okay, 2007, forgery charges, and it was computer fraud, forgery, something. That's how they worded it.
It's crazy because when she left prison in the 90s, she had about $1.5 million to her name. So she doesn't stop and say, oh, I have plenty of money. No, the forgery charges, she had befriended another person, another elderly woman. And she just happened to start taking her money, essentially.
Yeah, kind of identity theft, whatever. She comes from a good family. She probably was brought up, you know, to me, in a very pampered home. What went wrong here? I mean, is this nature versus nurture? Is this, to me, there's a clear pattern. And I don't know if she's guilty of every single thing to the 100th degree, but I think she's probably guilty of a lot more than what they've caught her for. Because... what is it? Just a con artist.
She's a bad seed, I think.
Yeah.
If she really is a sociopath and she doesn't see her criminal behavior as wrong, she probably feels like she's due. These things are owed to her.
And she doesn't care about who she hurts or destroys along the way at all.
Right. She doesn't have any feelings related to that. And I think the proof's all there. You look over her history and she has problems as a young girl, but it just gets worse. It's almost as though the older she gets, the better she is at getting away with these crimes, or at least getting bolder in committing them.
half the people we interact with on a daily basis are probably certifiable, but we don't realize that because people can just hold their stuff together. And I think she was just very good. I mean, she was just very cunning and very, you know, just had her way about it. She could get people to believe her, get people to do her bidding. She just was able to skate through life. And it's sad and sort of funny all at the same time that it's almost like good looks and a good smile can get you through any door and or get you out of a murder charge. I would assume that she was guilty of everything that they tried to charge her with, if not more.
Right. Well, she's up there in age now.
Yeah.
I think the people that have to worry about her are probably, if you look at her last crime, the forgery, that's probably the kind of crimes I would guess that she'll be involved with now. I think being up in the age she is now, I'm not going to say it's impossible for her to set more fires, but I think she's either going to quit finally or she'll again land herself in prison because of some fraud or forgery.
Everyone is good-natured, and everybody gives everyone the benefit of the doubt. I truly believe that's why serial killers are able to get away with what they do, because we want to think everyone's good. And so if somebody needs our help or somebody asks, you know, hey, I need something, or come into my house and help me carry a furniture, you know, some sort of furniture upstairs. And we're like, oh, I want to help this person out. You know, I think that's where people like her are able to flourish. And maybe she's not capable of killing anybody, but I still think that she could talk somebody else into doing it. It's almost like a Charlie Manson sort of situation, you know, where Charlie didn't kill anybody, but he sure got a lot of other people to do it for him. And I don't know if Marjorie's as dangerous as Charlie, but I put her in the same category.
So this isn't really the entire story, though, is it?
No,
it's most of the story.
Yeah.
But when we first heard about this story, what was the first thing we were told about it?
This one's crazy, and you are not going to believe it.
Well, I also remember being told that there are quite a few people that believe that this house is haunted.
Oh, yeah.
It's the classic story of there's a wealthy person there that someone had stabbed them in the back, essentially, and taken their money away from them and taken their life away from them, and that this person cannot rest.
Well, yeah, and of course, we all know this story because it was a extremely rich family that had a terrible tragedy happen to them. And here we are, you know, a big mansion that's off the shore of, you know, the Great Lakes. If this happened to somebody in the inner city, you know, I mean, I'm sure this kind of story plays out every day, but we don't hear about it. But what makes this so popular is because it was a very rich family, and it's an heiress and everything else. So hence, it just leads into, well, yeah, you got this big, huge, eerie mansion now that is a breeding ground for ghosts or hauntings because there was a murder, you know, double murder that happened there.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
Yeah, I read quite a few stories that were related. onto the internet by people that had been to the house. Mm-hmm. And there are some images taken of the house where people say you can see a woman looking out of the window. That's probably the window that is in Elizabeth's room, the one she died in. Mm-hmm. They say that there are cold spots. People do report that they see people moving out of the corner of their eye and that they feel like they're watched. Have you read some of these things?
Yeah. Yeah. And the home is now owned by, I guess it's the Duluth College, and it's a historical, you know, tourist place. And there's people that go through the home, and the tour guides talk about their feelings and what the presence they feel in the home. This house was built, you know, a long, long time ago, and it's just kind of creepy and laid out. You know, it's almost, it reminded me of like the Winchester House, or, you know, just some of these other creepy places, these old creepy mansions. So I could see how you can let your emotion get away with you when you're in the place, because it's such a big place, and being somewhere like that alone, I could see how your mind could play some tricks on you.
What I find interesting is it's in 1968 that Elizabeth gives the estate to the University of Minnesota Duluth. Mm-hmm. And they, this is funny, you, when you read up on this, it makes it sound like they're being nice, but she's the one who gave them the home. They let her stay there until she died.
Yeah.
And they tried to preserve it. And there are all kinds of different tours. You can actually go with the tour guide. There are unguided tours, but there are a lot of ropes up. But they do have special tours, which are known as slipper tours. And you take your shoes off and put on slippers, and you can actually walk around much more of the house than you would if you weren't on that tour.
Oh. I took a tour of Hearst Castle up in Northern California, and there's all kinds of special tours there. So it reminds me of that, where you can take the garden tour or the upper bedroom tour or the grand hall tour, you know. So
yeah, so there's not a lot of word on the actual hauntings. Again, if you want to look this up, there's an image that's pretty interesting. It does look like there might be someone in the window. It's not as well documented, I don't think, as maybe we had hoped for it to be. But either way, it's an interesting place because of its size. It's a beautiful place. There are YouTube videos. There are images online. I would check those out. And, of course, the story of Elizabeth here, who adopted two girls trying to give them a better life. And one of them ends up being what I would call a bad seed, and ultimately causes Elizabeth's death.
It's a scary story when you think of it. And I guess when you do, if you go up to this mansion, you go on the tour, they don't talk about the murder on the tour. They talk about, you know, they it's more of a look at this grand home and this family, and, you know, their philanthropy and the good things they brought to the community. They don't talk about the murder, which is kind of sad that the murder would overshadow the greatness, but at the same time, that's what we all want to hear about. So,
well, they do answer questions after the tour. Mm-hmm. So, and this is something I was reading about people who, I've seen this on Facebook and I've seen this on some of the websites. They say that you wait until after the tour is over and then you can ask questions. Mm-hmm. And you can talk to them about the murders, but they don't want to, I guess on the tour itself, they like to keep that focused on the more positive aspects of the home and of the history of the family. I think it's definitely a more professional way to do it. Mm-hmm. And yet they still will talk about it later.
Yeah.
I think it's the best. It's probably the best way to handle this.
I took tours of plantations down in New Orleans and Louisiana, and only one of the tours I ever went on, they actually took you to the slave quarters and talked openly about, well, this is where they kept the slaves and this is how the slaves were treated. So, and I didn't think it was that distracting from the tour. It was just part of the tour. So It's just, however, you know, if the part of the tour where they talk about the murders at the very end, that's fine. I think it's professional either way. I don't think the tour should be a murder tour, though, because that's not really the point.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.